Think about when you go and put your credit card information into Amazon or whatever it may be. What are you giving up? You're giving up your full name, your address, your birthday sometimes, your phone number, all this private information. Why do I need to do that to order something for like 10 bucks? There's no reason for that, honestly. And as I become more and more of a Bitcoiner and privacy focused, man, I see a future of Lightning.
Hello and welcome to Bitcoin with Jake. Listen in to hear from Bitcoiners dispersed all across the globe whose personal journeys I leverage to gain conviction in an ongoing due diligence process. I need to take a moment to mention our sponsors. Orange Pill app is for those of us that want to meet Bitcoiners. Dubbed Bitcoin Social Layer, it helps you connect in an ultra-local fashion whilst also curating suitable events nearby. Check out episode 48 to hear the journey of Mateo, the founder of Orange Pill app, in case you need any more excuses to sign up. Hardblock is an Australian Bitcoin exchange. They've been serving the community from as far back as 2014, never got sucked into the dubious world of altcoins, and continue to be one of the industry leaders down under. Check out episode 17 to hear from Daniel Wilczynski, the founder of Hardblock, for a more in-depth background. Now, let's get on with today's show.
Today, I'm speaking with Eric Budowski. Hey, Eric, how are you?
Hey, Jake, thanks for having me.
My pleasure. You have confessed, you have actually listened to some of these episodes before, so you know a little bit of what's coming up. We always start in the same way. So rewind the clock, Bitcoin came into your life. What were you doing and where were you at the time?
My absolute first touch, I think, was back when I was in high school. This is probably like 9th to 10th grade. I'm really young.
Yeah.
And one of my friends was trying to buy weed off the Silk Road. So he's like, hey, check out this Bitcoin thing. You have to use your dollars to buy Bitcoin, which then you can go and buy weed off the dark web. And I was like, this is kind of way over my head. So that was the first touch point. And then fast forward 2017, you see the bull run happen. And I was like, I got to get a part of the action. So bought some myself. And then at my university, actually, there was a Bitcoin blockchain club. And admittedly, it was really altcoiny, shitcoiny.
Yeah.
Most of the sessions were about Ethereum and how that worked. However, I was around people talking about cryptocurrency more in general, starting to get an understanding of like, what is this thing? Starting to grasp it. And then from there, yeah. So just really started trading crypto and eventually found my way back to Bitcoin. But I'm sure we can dive a little more into that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. We can. It's very common that people got wrapped up in crypto before figuring out that Bitcoin was really what they wanted to focus on. So perhaps you can talk a bit about your university experience. Like, were you studying something specific that helped you understand the background or the technology of Bitcoin or crypto in general? And what were you doing at the time?
Sure. Yeah, I was actually studying energy engineering. I was in the engineering track. I really only took two economics classes. One was like a 102 class. And another one was a 300-400 level class, but more tailored towards my major. So no in-depth finance education or economics education. And as you probably know, they teach more Keynesian economics too at university. So I wasn't even learning exactly the right track for that. Nah, man, I just wanted to get rich because I saw the Bitcoin price go up. So I'm probably around 21 or so in college. And I have a little bit of beer money to my name. And so I said, okay, screw it. Might as well buy some, try to make this into more beer money. That's how I fell down the hole with crypto trading. And as you know, the story goes, I got wrecked. As soon as 2018 happened, the market tanked. I lost all my beer money, couldn't go to the bar for a couple of weeks. Kind of sad. And then, yeah, slowly built back up and found my way to Bitcoin.
Awesome. And so was there a particular moment during that progress that Bitcoin really caught your attention? So was there someone you were following or something you read or a moment that made you go, actually, hang on, maybe this is slightly different than the rest of this basket of goods I've been trying to trade?
Yeah, I don't think I can recall a definite moment. I think it was more of a slow drip. So after 2018, I kind of put it down for a little bit. I graduated from university, get a fiat job in the real world. And I actually, my side hustle was more on real estate. I wanted to be a real estate project manager, you know, house flipper. That's what my family does. So I was like, all right, I'll do that too. So yeah, going through the process of buying a house and everything. But in the background, I'm on Bitcoin Twitter. I'm starting to read the Bitcoin Standard. You know how it is, the slow drip of education. And then eventually, I think really what it was, late 2019 into early 2020, I actually had Crohn's disease and I had to go to the hospital for emergency surgery. So at that time, I had a ton of time on my hands. I was on PTO for work, basically like a long leave. And I was just searching the internet every day. I guess one thing I recall is Googling, how do you start a bank? I see all these bankers getting rich. It's like, why can't I do that? And that eventually led me to Bitcoin. I'm not sure exactly how, but I do remember that specific instance. And I just had a ton of time on my hand to Google around.
Okay, so for those out there that haven't necessarily understood the connection between banking and Bitcoin, that's a great segue to dive into that. So how does Bitcoin enable you to be a bank?
Yeah, it allows you to store your wealth like a bank does. Instead of having a counterparty, which is, I guess, a bank, having someone to go to store your wealth so you don't have to keep it in your house, Bitcoin is that bank, except there's no middleman, and it's arguably way more secure than an actual bank if you know how to properly store your Bitcoin in a hardware wallet.
Mm. Yeah, it's cool, isn't it? And I love that phrase, like being your own bank. You're saying, okay, hang on. So what have I got to do here? Okay, there's all these steps that you have to figure out, and you can. I mean, I'm living proof that you can go through this process and figure out how to set up a multi-sig vault. And, you know, I've got a vault with Unchained and a key with someone else. And suddenly it's like, well, come get me. Like, no one's ever going to be able to get those Bitcoin unless they figure out how it's done. And just the attack on that is just so hard that it makes it pointless. They might as well go and steal something else.
Yeah.
And it's just a fascinating moment, isn't it?
It definitely is. It's empowering. We humans have never had this kind of sovereign ability to store their wealth. And I think I tweeted this out yesterday, but there's the 6102 attack, which is basically the government says, give me all your Bitcoin. It's getting out of hand. We need to control it. How are they going to get 12 words stored in my head? Okay, maybe they can force me to do that. How do they get the millions of other Bitcoiners to do the same thing? You can't do it. So this is really ushering a new paradigm where people now have the ability to gain back control of their wealth and not give it to the banks who just inflated away over time.
It's a huge step change, isn't it? And it's somehow like, this is a strange analogy to draw, but and actually I question the facts behind it in some ways, but the whole point of a nuclear warhead has got to the point where you just don't nuke each other. Because you know it's like mass extinction. Now, okay, maybe the number of nukes are misreported and we've been led down a rabbit hole. And that's a whole nother kind of discussion in itself in terms of misinformation and what's true and what's not true. But the fact that someone has the ability to store their wealth in such a defensive way changes the game. And that's the key, right?
Yeah, exactly. There's a release valve, I guess. We're not trapped in the system anymore, which previously humans were in modern day. So now we have a way to opt out. If those in control of the money, the Federal Reserve, the governments around the World Bank, if they don't adhere to the individuals and what we want, we're going to leave. And we have an option to leave now.
That's when the kind of jurisdictional arbitrage conversation comes in. And that's something that I really enjoy too. It's like when you have your wealth stored digitally, you cannot be held to ransom in the same way that a government previously could. Yep. That again is like a complete change in the paradigm, isn't it?
Yeah. Have you read The Sovereign Individual yet?
I have, yes. Yep.
Man, I swear I dream about that book nowadays, like almost every night. It predicted so much. And my life the last couple of years, since I really started falling down the Bitcoin rabbit hole, has now expanded to becoming more of a sovereign individual. So when you have your money in a bank account in cyberspace that has no borders, that kind of frees you up now to move wherever the jurisdiction that favors what you need and provide to you. I'm in the States right now, and don't get me wrong, the States are awesome. But as time goes on, I have decades more to live. There might be a consideration where I do that jurisdictional arbitrage and go somewhere else that's more favorable to Bitcoiners and sovereigns in general.
Yeah, and it's 100% something my wife and I talk about a lot. So I'm based in Melbourne. We had some of the toughest lockdowns in the world here for, 2 years, basically, it went on for.
Yeah.
And, you know, it would be crazy to have not had that discussion a number of times. It's like, are we in the wrong place and can we move?
Right.
And when you store your wealth in such a digital and sovereign way, it becomes much easier. I mean, personally speaking, I've now sold any real estate that I physically had, and I've loaded up on Bitcoin in the last 4 to 6 months. And hopefully we're going to hit into a bull run. It's going to be the best decision I've ever made. Equally, if the government locked me down again, I could leave and not be worried about the house that's been left behind that is a proportionately large part of what was my net wealth. It's really cool. And you mentioned before, like you're actually traveling around the US as well. So that's another thing that you can actually do.
Yeah, before we jump into that, I'll say that's the difference between now and any time in human history. Mm-hmm. If you wanted to leave a certain jurisdiction, how do you take your wealth with you?
How do you do it? Yeah.
You have gold. How are you going to carry gold with you? You can't across a border. It'll just get confiscated or you'll get robbed. Your real estate, that's planted there. So that's not moving. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to sell it into cash maybe, but same issue as gold. It's like, how do you get that cash halfway across the world? Pretty hard. Mm-hmm. You want to try to do it digitally too. There's a lot of hoops in the way and government crackdown to make sure that that doesn't happen. Yeah. So this is the one solution now that we have to move borders.
Information doesn't flow through markets fairly. So you and I are on this video call right now discussing the awesome characteristics of Bitcoin and how it changes the game for everyone. Yeah. But most people haven't yet figured it out. And that represents an opportunity to start companies, to actually create wealth as an investor and take a position in Bitcoin. And it's just an incredible moment in time that we're very, very lucky to be part of.
Yeah.
Don't you agree? I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I give myself a little bit of credit for just being curious about Bitcoin in general. I've stated before that my original reason for getting into it was because I wanted to get rich, get money, make money from that price appreciation. But you stay for the freedom money, really. I couldn't imagine my life without Bitcoin nowadays. It's changed me so radically. For those listening that are just starting their journey, man, Bitcoin changes you so much. I am not the same person I was, I'd say, 3 or 4 years ago when I really started going down the rabbit hole.
Yeah, it's fun, isn't it? Wow. And who knows where it's going to take us. So, Eric, what I'd love to dive into, there's a number of ways we could take this conversation, but particularly because we focus on personal journeys. You're founding a business, the Bitcoin Talent Co.
Yeah.
But that's relatively recently launched. Talk us through the genesis of where that's come from. And in particular, I saw a tweet thread of yours once explaining how you ended up getting work with Bitcoin Magazine.
Yeah.
And how that events experience led through to what, you know, you're able to set up now. So just take us through that whole process, because it's awesome to understand how do you get involved in Bitcoin? And this is just one person's journey.
Sure. Yeah. Let's rewind. So I was in a ski trip, actually, snowboarding in Jackson Hole, Wyoming with my friends. And I'm already like decently far down the rabbit hole. This is January 2021. And I just had some time to think. And I've been contemplating this for a while, quitting my fiat job. I was working as a civil engineer in a dreary office, a terrible manager. It was just like the worst couple of years of my life. And it was my first experience in like a real world job too. I was like, this can't be my life for the next 50 years, however long I'm working. I need to make a change and a change quick.
Yep.
So after this trip, I get back. And I did make pretty drastic change. And I just told my company that I'm quitting. I'm going to go start working in Bitcoin. I didn't really have a formal plan, to be honest. So what I did was start working at education. I partnered up with another friend of mine named T-Ball. He was very active on Clubhouse. And he's actually a teacher, too. So I said, okay, great. Let me try to take a crack at the marketing. You put together the teaching modules. Let's get a couple of cohorts together, try to educate people, friends and family and whoever else about Bitcoin, trying to make a little money on it too. So we did that for a little while. And admittedly, it just wasn't making sustainably enough money for me to do that full time. So I started looking for jobs. One of the first companies I applied to was Bitcoin Magazine as an account manager, which is funny because coming from engineering, I was doing more product management engineering and switching over to now business, but account management still project management in a way too. So I landed a job there through my networking, constant follow-up, and just got a little bit of luck too. And then I was there for a little over a year. And my partner, Andy from Bitcoin Talent Co, reached out to me because I was posting content on Twitter related to Bitcoin careers and just like talking about how awesome it is working in the Bitcoin industry, working around other Bitcoiners. Man, I still feel that every day. And that excitement, I just put that online and it attracted attention. So Andy actually had an existing recruiting firm based out in California. He's been doing it the last 3 or 4 years or so and was very successful. So he was like, hey, I need someone more in the Bitcoin industry with those connections, network, a little bit deeper understanding of Bitcoin to start up a Bitcoin focused recruiting agency. And I was like, this is so smart. I was thinking more about the candidate side. So how do we get more Bitcoiners jobs? He's coming from the opposite side. How do we help Bitcoin companies staff up through their startup phase? So yeah, we just got to work. I'd say probably early December or so. And fast forward now, it's mid-April. We officially launched end of February. I'm proud to say we have probably 5 or 6 clients now hiring for over just under 10 roles. And yeah, every day I feel like we're just making progress here. So our whole goal really with the Bitcoin Talent Co. is to take professionals inside traditional tech or other industries. Let's bring them over to Bitcoin and educate them on Bitcoin. So imagine if a top performer at Google came to the Bitcoin space and built the next greatest Bitcoin company over the next couple of years. That's where it really gets exciting. And that's what I've been experiencing so far as a recruiter, reaching out to these people outside the industry. They don't really know what Bitcoin is, but they're interested. So the handful of people that we've brought in so far, I mean, fast forward a couple of years from now, I just can't wait to see where things are at.
It's so cool. And I love that organic journey that entrepreneurship takes. We rewind to that snowboarding holiday that you were on. You're like, is this it? Is this honestly it? Fuck this. I'm not doing this. And that curiosity, risk-taking profile, whatever you want to call it, has taken you to this point today where, you know, you're generating value for people in an industry that you care about. And it's shining through. How cool is that?
I would like to mention too, I had a real estate company actually from like 2018 to 2020. And it was wholesaling. So what it was basically, I talked to homeowners that needed to sell their home fast. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of cold calling, cold reach out, that kind of stuff, and convincing them to sell me their home at a discount. For some reason, they didn't do it quickly. My pitch is basically, hey, I can buy your home for cash in 5 to 7 days. Some people bet on that. It's a way to make a ton of money, except that I didn't believe what I was selling. So although I did a few deals, it wasn't something that excited me. I had to like force myself to pick up the phone and call people. Mm-hmm. But now when I think about doing any kind of sales related to Bitcoin Talent Co., Bitcoin EDU, which was the education part, Bitcoin Magazine, it was just so easy and fluent to talk to people about it because I actually believed in what I was selling. Mm-hmm. Anything related to Bitcoin, anything that pushes Bitcoin forward, I'm very happy to quote unquote sell because I'm not even really selling it, just talking about it.
And it's that mentality, Eric, that is just another defensive asset that Bitcoin has. You know, the way that it incentivizes Bitcoin is to behave in a certain way. And you mentioned already being a different person in some senses, but this sense of purpose for a vision, it's very, very powerful and is another of the reasons that I think it's a great place to put some capital to actually, you know, you need to be buying Bitcoin, guys. If anyone's out there listening and isn't doing that, then they need to really heavily consider it. So have you placed some candidates yet into some of your clients that you've signed?
Yeah, we've placed a few actually. We officially launched late February. And it typically takes, depends on the level of the role and depends on a little bit of luck too, to be honest. But the typical process is like 60 days or so. Maybe senior level role can go to 90 days or more.
That's how long it takes to place someone.
It's from the initial, hey, contract signed, let's get to work. So what we do is we set up a meeting with the hiring manager and we say, let's really break this role down to come up with a proper job description. Let's kind of figure out what's our initial search going to be. That's the kickoff point, really. And we get the outbound searching going. And then from there, like I said, like 60 days or so is when we hope to have someone hired by the hiring manager.
Ah, got you. Okay, that's how long the process takes. Okay. Yeah. And so in terms of the business model, can you share a bit about how you guys as a company make money?
Any other recruiting firm works very similarly. I would say most of the time, there's a small upfront fee to get the search kickstarted. And after that, we get to work, do our thing. We don't get paid until that role is filled. And typically, it's a percentage of first year annual salary.
Okay, cool. Nice. Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it, to think about the talent that's been naturally drawn into Bitcoin. And this is, you know, very similar to yourself. I have a similar story where there was a number of touch points and you eventually get further and further down the Bitcoin hole and you realize there's nothing else that you want to work on other than Bitcoin. And that journey's a very organic one. And you wonder, okay, well, how can we turbocharge that for top talent that hasn't yet figured all this out, but doesn't need to spend thousands of hours doing all this research? Because we say, guys, this is a fucking serious opportunity. Come have a look.
Right.
Gosh, interesting. And so how has the feedback been from some of these candidates as you reach out to them? So what's the kind of conversation like and how does that go?
Yeah, first I'll talk about inbounds. I have a ton of Bitcoiners in my DMs hitting me up. And sorry to those I haven't gotten back to yet. Wow. I'm working my way through that. We have a talent pool, I would say it's a little over 1,000 people now, of Bitcoiners and their resumes. And what our system does, we have a tracking system. It kind of just tags them for different roles. So Jake, let's just say Jake's a sales guy. So any roles that come up, Jake's profile pops up and we reach out to him. So that's the inbound part for Bitcoiners. And there's inbound as well for people interested in Bitcoin, but they have nothing about Bitcoin on their social media. So if I go to someone's LinkedIn page, maybe they're an exec at a top tech company. They're closet Bitcoiners. So they'll come in my DMs and just say, I'm so glad there's at least some kind of resource now that we can start initiating this process to get into the Bitcoin industry. So that's the inbound part. And then outbound, yeah, a lot of it right now is a couple of different avenues. I'd say the major one is email and LinkedIn. So we just create email sequences. A lot of them are cold. And we just reach out cold and say, hey, are you interested in working in the Bitcoin industry? We have a very exciting opportunity that fits your profile. And small percentage bites, like any other kind of cold sales. And from there, we initiate a conversation and see if they're a good fit or not.
Awesome. And the companies that you've signed that you're hiring for, can you share a bit of detail about them? And what are the kind of companies you expect to see in the future that need the service you're generating?
Yeah, I'm honestly not sure. We just had a team meeting about this yesterday. We're going to start advertising who we're working with and roles we're filling. But right now, we're kind of keeping it quiet. I could say, yeah, we're working with six or seven.
You don't have to say who they are by name.
Yeah, specific companies. But I will say, yeah, these are top reputable companies in the industry. I can give you a few names offline here and you're going
to be it's okay. Wow. What I'm trying to get at is, as a content creator, monetizing the content I generate has been quite difficult, not only because the audience is still relatively small and I'm only a year into this process, but also Bitcoin companies, bear market, they don't have a lot of money, right? They're new companies. They're maybe a seed or series A stage if they're venture funded, or equally if they're self-funded, they're quite strapped for cash as a bunch of customers, generally speaking. You're not going to Google and trying to sell them stuff. So when that comes to building a business like yourselves, like, which are the areas of the Bitcoin industry that you see needing the most help? As sponsors, for example, I always thought exchanges would be a really good focus, but actually I have a global audience and a lot of these exchanges have got jurisdictions into certain countries. And so you might say I've got 10,000 listens, but only 30%, for example, are in Australia. Yeah. So it kind of skews things a bit. I'm just intrigued as to the type of area of Bitcoin that's growing the most and looks to be the most valuable for you to focus on.
Yeah. Demographically, we do focus mostly in North America and Europe, Latin America. So taking that half of the world, really, what we're seeing is a lot of traditional finance Bitcoin companies that kind of bridge the gap there, as well as there is a mining company we're working with. We're trying to go a little more into that, bring on someone that's a little more mining expert as well. But yeah, a lot of the roles in particular too are, I'd say, more sales, biz development, and of course, engineering. So in the bear market, if you fit that profile, there's a good chance to get a Bitcoin job. If you don't, jobs are probably scarce. And I'd say wait to the bull market to, you know, continue your job application process. But yeah, in terms of companies, no specific type.
Who's got money, basically, and which area of the industry is super healthy right now and is able to actually put a bit of cash into this kind of thing?
Admittedly, what we do too is, you know, you can go and look at who is raising money and who has just recently raised money in the Bitcoin industry. It's public information. So if you're a business owner trying to work with Bitcoin companies, that's a good target.
I have a list myself as well.
and a lot of companies more recently in the bear market too, did a small round of raising just to get through the bear market. They understand these cycles. And so, they're like, okay, let's just do a small round just to get our...
like a bridge.
To get through the next year or so.
Do you guys have any competitors in this space at the moment?
There's a ton of crypto, right? There's no one specifically focusing on Bitcoin.
Okay.
And our team and our team of advisors all filled with Bitcoiners for a reason.
Yep.
And selfishly, we're trying to build a moat around us, trying to build up the best brand in the industry as first comers.
Yep.
So that when competitors do eventually come, we're going to be the best and we're going to be the go-to. So there is obviously Bitcoiner jobs, a lot of people have heard of. It's more or less just a job board, which we're going to be implementing as well. There's a couple of Bitcoin-focused job boards popping up nowadays. But yeah, we take that next step. We do the hands-on recruiting services, matching talent to companies.
Awesome. Yeah, I've got a friend who I went to uni with who has a headhunting business, and he places commodities traders. So it's, you know, it's a traditional industry, right? You're like looking for talent. Where can you match it to in the marketplace? And where does that go? The cool part about it is you can definitely, and he has, carve out a real niche. And so there's not that many people in the world that will be looking for Bitcoin jobs. And there's not that many Bitcoin companies looking for people. And once you've done one deal, do you just go back to the same person? It's just brokering, isn't it, in some ways? So that's really exciting. How cool. So are there any threats to this kind of business model and anything that gets you worried? Or is it literally just all steam ahead, see what happens?
Yeah, I think recruiting overall, it's a pretty solid industry. And even in a recession, companies are still looking to hire. Even bear markets, companies are still looking to hire, which is great. Let's think about employment now. Since COVID, everything went remote. Mm-hmm. Most people work remote nowadays. What happens to employment when you don't need to come to an office? Maybe you don't need to work that standard, at least in the United States here, 40 hours a week. What does that look like? So let's think of a company, right, that has a small amount of cash in the bank and they need to hire for a few roles, or better put, they need to hire for a few types of jobs. These could be more shorter term jobs. Mm-hmm. So I see the job industry more in general moving towards contract work, a little more part-time or even full-time, but there's a 3-month sprint to get a specific task or job done. Because why bring on someone full-time with all that overhead? If you're not sure after a couple months, you need them or not. I see a lot of that happening, and especially thinking about AI now and automation, a lot of jobs that are being done by humans remotely will be wiped out. So what's the landscape going to look like when AI officially takes over? I don't know. It's murky waters right now. And that's kind of how I'm projecting into the future, what I'm seeing. And what's really special is there's a company called Stackwork that leverages the Lightning Network to pay out micro tasks and for workers anywhere in the world.
Wow.
It's kind of like a Fiverr. I need something done. But what's really special about using Bitcoin and Lightning is that there's no barriers. You don't need to go through any financial institution. Same thing with the company too, honestly. The company could be based in India. Mm. The worker can be based in Africa. They can do this micro task, get paid a couple thousand sats, whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. And it's instant right away. So I do see work evolving into less full-time, more part-time, and even more micro-tasks too.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's really fascinating to think about. Some of the, and this has been a theme in recent podcast episodes actually, but markets that were never actually possible until now due to micropayments. Yep. So I had an amazing Lightning developer called Rusty Russell come on the show recently. He was literally one of the earliest pioneers of the Lightning Network. He's based in Adelaide here in Australia. And this is what he was talking about, which is how does the world look in a future in which these markets have been opened for the first time, when you can send fractions of a penny to someone?
Yeah.
Now, whatever that value might represent, it doesn't necessarily matter, but it's a whole new world. Throw into the fact that you've got a sound currency like Bitcoin underneath it, where people can store purchasing power, maybe the demand for a full-time job disappears anyway.
That's kind of how I'm leaning right now. And just to give you a few examples, MicroTask, like I mentioned before, that Stackwork helps facilitate on their platform. There's, let's say, podcasting, streaming value for value. Instead of allowing people to listen for free, they just give up a few sats per minute, whatever it may be, to listen to your content. That's another example of revolutionizing traditional content that's been around for the last decade. Let's think, what else do we got? There is
music. There's a platform called Wavelake that Oaken mentioned to me recently. Shout out to Oaken. So that's basically like Spotify, but value for value. So as you listen to a band, you send them sats. Yeah, it's all over the place. It's crazy, isn't it? It's literally like the plumbing of the internet is being redone with 10 times the efficiency of the previous. You've got to go onto Amazon. You've got to put your card details in. You've got to, you know, put your address in. They've got to double check that you're actually the right person. And the funds don't settle for days. Yeah. It's like, this is insane in comparison to what the Lightning Network allows.
I tweeted about this yesterday too, actually, which is coincidental. Think about when you go and put your credit card information into Amazon or whatever it may be. What are you giving up? You're giving up your full name, your address, your birthday sometimes, your phone number, all this private information. Why do I need to do that to order something for like $10? There's no reason for that, honestly. And as I become more and more of a Bitcoiner and privacy focused, man, I see a future of Lightning. There's eCash now too. More privacy focused tools that enable payments across borders instantly and privately focused.
It's so cool. And actually last night, shout out to Gary Larkin, if he's listening, I got my first Zap on Noster. So I got 1,000 sats sent through.
That's what I wanted to bring up before. Okay. So you're on Noster. I think that completely changes content creation, because now instead of likes are kind of baseless, right? Mm-hmm. Anyone can use a like because there's no value attached to it.
No
but cost, instead of sending a like, you send 100 sets, that changes. Mm-hmm. And you can see the real great content emerge that gets more zaps, more value added to that specific piece of content. You know, that's high signal.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really excited to see how that revolutionizes all the social media platforms and content creators.
How do you think that will affect you guys then as a business? So Bitcoin Talent Co, you mentioned before that you teamed up with a buddy who was doing the education and you were more involved in the marketing. So teach us a bit about what you learned from that marketing experience and how you now look to utilize these different platforms and tools as you build a business.
Sure. Yeah. I think anyone living in 2023, if you're an entrepreneur or not, you have to start building somewhat of a social media following and create content.
Mm-hmm.
In any aspect. So you have a couple different platforms, you know, Twitter and LinkedIn are more writing based, TikTok's more video based, Instagram's more like photo based. You have different mediums here. Like there's Spotify for podcasting. Mm-hmm. There's these different mediums here. And I would say to anyone listening right now, you need to pick one and start growing a following and grow a name for yourself in a specific niche, industry, whatever it may be. So what I personally did is I took a writing course towards the end of last summer. It's called Ship 30 for 30. These guys are both on Twitter. They're fantastic writers. But what it does is it teaches you to write every day and then start posting that content online for feedback. Mm-hmm. So I started that probably, what is it, April now? I'd probably say like 8 months ago or so, and getting serious about content creation. Mm-hmm. I grew my Twitter now from like 1,000 followers back then, almost at like 9,000 followers now, mm-hmm. which is the first 10K followers is always the hardest.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't relay to you over this call right now how many opportunities that's brought to me.
Wow.
Putting your ideas online, refining them, getting feedback from others, networking with others, commenting back to people's posts as they reply to yours, that opens up so many doors. And so, yeah, I just think content creation in this decade and beyond is very important in any industry.
So I actually did a presentation as like the 1 year anniversary of the podcast at a Bitcoin meetup here called the Bitcoin Bush Bash. And it was like 30 minutes long and showed everyone the kind of three pillars that I talk about to create a podcast, which you've got to, you know, produce it, you've got to publish it, and then you've got to promote it. And there was a number of different things I weaved into it. But one of the names that I thought of calling it, which I didn't in the end, I called it Bitcoin Podcasting Leverage in the Digital Age. And I look at, you know, the amount of hours that people have listened to these conversations that I've done is now, mm-hmm. you know, I've done maybe, let's say this is episode 75, and on average, they're an hour long. Thousands of hours have been listened to now. It's like, oh my God. And okay, fine. In terms of sponsorship deal, I'm not making as much money as I would have hoped to in terms of monetization yet. But it's mm-hmm. extraordinary to think that like literally 20x the amount of time I spent doing this, it's been consumed mm-hmm. on YouTube. And you go, wow, like that's leverage, isn't it? I couldn't talk to that many people, even if I tried. Yeah. And so one of the things—
And it compounds too.
And it compounds, yeah, because everyone watches the same things often. Mm-hmm. I thought of calling it being your own brand. Mm-hmm. So in the same way as being your own bank, Bitcoin allows that. Like, why aren't we our own brands online? Especially when you can start to use these sovereign tools, then no one's going to ever take it away from you. That zap last night was like, oh my God, literally no one can stop that.
I had the same exact feeling when I did it. And sorry, I never closed the loop on your last question there. Building up a social following, right? One that brought opportunities to me that kind of created Bitcoin Talent Co. My partner would not have reached out to me if I wasn't active on Twitter and LinkedIn posting about Bitcoin and career, that kind of stuff. Now what I do is I leverage the following I built to advertise open positions as well as some biz development efforts, right? So if I slide in a Bitcoin CEO's DMs and they see I'm followed by pretty decently mm-hmm. like known accounts in the Bitcoin space, and I have a decent following and I put out Bitcoin content, they can see I'm a true Bitcoiner. The odds of them answering my message are so much more now. So building up that initial personal brand brings opportunities. Then from that, you can use that to leverage it to make deals, get content out, whatever it may be for your business. Mm. It's been working so well, honestly.
And Eric, so how do you see Twitter in general? It's been a critical tool in my Bitcoin journey to date.
Yeah, same.
Where do we think that's going in the future? I mean, obviously, Mr. Musk is now the main shareholder, or the only shareholder.
we've got Noster, but it's still so bloody early on that thing. It doesn't work half the time.
Yeah.
Do you see any risk in that in terms of like, is Bitcoin suddenly going to get switched off?
Right. Yeah. So anyone listening doesn't know really what Noster is or the potential it has. It allows you to take your audience you built and move it over to another client, what it's called. So you can never really get canceled. So if you, let's just say, for instance, if you built a following on Twitter and then a year or two later, Elon Musk or the US government decides any content creators that mention Bitcoin, their accounts will be suspended or severely depressed, whatever it may be in the algorithm.
Yeah, shadow banned.
Shadow banned. That's what I was looking for. That's a huge problem. And that's happened to a lot of people. So the way I think about it is pick one platform, build up an audience. Then you have to diversify that audience. So you have to start building up adjacent audiences. And then where Twitter comes in is that if it pans out, if the development continues and it's really great to use and more users come onto the network, then that kind of gets rid of the platform diversification theory that I have. It's more of, you can just build an audience on Noster and bring it around to different platforms.
Mm. Awesome. It is really exciting and we don't know where it's going to go, but it's well worth investigating. And you know, when you get paid with native digital money, like last night, I was just sitting on the sofa and my wallet of Satoshi notifications went ting, 1,000 sats. I'm like,
yeah,
what the fuck just happened?
Yeah. Man, you got to get on Fountain.
Yeah, well, I do use Fountain, or I post on Fountain, but I found that, at least to date, I haven't used it as a user. So okay, you can get my podcast on there. And I think my year-end stats was I'd made about $45 from value for value sources. So that was...
That's great.
The Gazer Fund, so Mick Marucci's business, which is like the crowdfunding for with Bitcoin, really awesome. Yeah. So that's where I ask for donations if anyone wants to give them. So like a Patreon competitor in a sense. Mm-hmm. And then Fountain was the main source of like I've been getting boosts and whatever from them. But I found as a user, it's a bit buggy and I can't ever find anything on there. Like when you're trying to find your own Bitcoin with Jake profile, you're like, hang on, where is the wallet? I found it all a bit confusing. That's not to say that it won't improve. Like all digital products, what you look at today versus what it will be a year from now or 2 years from now, again, it's compounding, right? Software is so brilliant to build on because there isn't like, oh, we've got to double in size. Well, now we've got to kind of get twice the inventory. It doesn't work like that. Yep. It's completely different. So I'm sure they'll improve massively.
I think so too. I'm curious what you think about the future of content creation and content monetization more specifically. Mm. I've seen this past year quite different profiles get rid of their advertising or severely limit who can sponsor their content because, especially in this industry, if you partner with the wrong people, that could leave a very bad name on your profile. So yeah, how do you think about into the future now? Are you still looking to partner with Bitcoin companies specifically? Is there a stringent process you have? Is that going to go away altogether, sponsors? And is it going to be straight peer-to-peer?
Basically, I've been managing inheritance for over 10 years. My father died as a young man, sadly. So I got money in my 20s. And you've got this problem, like, how do you protect wealth?
Yeah.
And I've therefore been an investor. Ultimately, Bitcoin is what you want. And it's going to revolutionize family wealth management. And that's why I've started a podcast, because I wanted to talk about what I'd learned and evangelize, like many of us do, and explain why the characteristics of Bitcoin are superior to anything else we've ever seen before in terms of store of wealth over time. Now, the Bitcoin podcast that I run, I really enjoyed people's personal journeys as a form of due diligence on what Bitcoin is. And it was a skill that I picked up as an angel investor. When you're looking at, you know, business plan at a very early stage, you're really just investing in the people and how big you think the market is. So it's like, who are these people adopting Bitcoin? What do they know? And I found an incredibly passionate, incredibly driven, incredibly intelligent crowd of people who are all using it as their primary form of money. Interesting. Could they be wrong? Yes. Do I believe they're wrong? No. Do I want to get in with them? Hell yes. Let's go. So of my investable assets, I'm now like 90% in Bitcoin. The main value creation for me will be that Bitcoin position. And if we have a bull run and we get a 3 or 4x from here, you know, that's some of the best investing you can possibly do with no counterparty risk. And suddenly it's like, came for the gain, stay for the revolution. So as an entrepreneur and I'm looking at my content creation, I am constantly trying to think of better ways to monetize it. Mm-hmm. And I like this idea of generate value. If you generate value, success comes. So yes. I've obviously been putting out these conversations. I've been trying to figure out how best to promote them. But ultimately, I like this idea of business-to-business sponsorship contracts. Mm-hmm. So I've made, I think, total income for the year was roughly $9,000 year one, of which $45 was value for value.
So, and the rest came from sponsors?
The rest came from sponsors, yeah.
Impressive.
That was, I only got a sponsored contract in the second half of that. So that was mm-hmm. over 6 months. That was with Fast Bitcoins. Shout out to Danny and his team. We ended that contract about 6 weeks ago, and I've subsequently signed another contract with the Orange Pill app. So shout out to Mateo.
Oh, nice.
Guys there.
Yeah.
And I'm in a couple of conversations now with some other business-to-business opportunities, so some exchanges and a few different people in the mining industry. But nothing as of yet has been signed. What I think is very, very important is that, or at least I'm learning, the most important person in the content creation kind of concept is the audience. Who are you creating this for? And actually, it turns out I was a bit of a headless chicken. And although I had the problem of due diligencing Bitcoin and people's personal journeys, like, who was I trying to talk to? So I've been going through a marketing strategy review the last like 6 weeks or so, trying to figure out, well, who is my ideal avatar? And I'm still not entirely sure who that person is, because until you figure that out, it's then you can say, okay, they're called Jake, they're 35, they have some assets, they want to move it into Bitcoin, so they need lots of education. They spend time online, you know, every hour they're online, socially and for business. They spend time on Twitter. Okay, Twitter's then your focus. And then email. And I'm just slowly kind of putting all the bits in place to kind of figure this out. I think the business-to-business sponsorship contract is very, very important, because value for value is still too small, at least from my experience. But yes, the audience member is the key. And just to summarize, I wouldn't sign a company that I wouldn't be happy to use myself. And the preference is for Bitcoin only. If they're not Bitcoin only, then I probably won't sign a sponsorship contract with them. But I think also my audience is still a bit small to really attract much attention from the bigger players.
Yeah. And that's kind of our thesis too with Bitcoin Talent Co. I think working with other Bitcoin companies, they're staffed with Bitcoiners themselves that share the same values and worldview and generally just better to work with.
Yep.
And you know, down the line, there's not a zero chance, but there's a low probability that they will do something to sabotage themselves or company, which could affect your platform, your content as well, because they are a sponsor and you've been showing them the last however many months. So that's something we're thinking about. But strategy overall, working with Bitcoin companies, specifically Bitcoin only companies, you're probably not going to go wrong, at least for the next couple of years. That's kind of my strategy too.
And I think it's a sound plan. One of the things that is concerning me, though, this is a wider topic in general. So early stage equity investing and VC is something that I've been very passionate about for a long time. I think there's a common theme that's currently happening, sadly, which is making money on top of Bitcoin is actually not that easy yet. So the venture funded businesses are looking for growth. But to grow, you need good revenue. And if they're not getting good revenues, then they're getting investors getting a bit impatient and have come in at high risk and early stage. Yeah. And that's why I take a business like Casa, for example. They've had to kind of diversify into wider digital assets over and above Bitcoin. I mean, that for me means I will never use that product.
I think they shot themselves in the foot, to be honest.
Agree, right? That's where you have to be really careful in terms of your partnerships that you choose. Obviously, you know, do your own research. Just because I will have done some research on a sponsorship partner, like anyone out there listening, you still need to go out there and figure it out yourself to an extent.
Yeah.
An episode I loved, not that I want to bag him out too badly, but Matt O'Dell was on Peter McCormack's show at the end of last year.
I listened to that.
An hour just like going after him. And
yeah, he grilled him.
It was one of those classic moments, because for me, I don't think you can say, oh, I didn't know that BlockFi were going to blow up. Like, you can't predict what things are going to happen. I agree with that. But to have them as a primary sponsor, like any of my sponsor contracts already, I've been in close contact with the founders, because you end up becoming, you know, friends with them. And so to kind of claim that, you know, completely ignorant of the stress and strain that said founder would have been under to make money as a business, I think that's not fair on the audience. Like, people are smarter than that. So yeah, you've got to be real careful who you choose to do business with. That's for sure.
There's a saying in Bitcoin, don't trust, verify. And I think the BlockFi example is a classic example of that, which on the surface, very clean website, very great backing by notable investors, great founding team, you know, awesome company overall. But if you dig underneath the hood here, you see they're rehypothecating funds, they're making ridiculous deal with FTX, which eventually led to their bankruptcy and a lot of funds lost by their clients. So anyone listening, I'd say don't trust Verify. It goes beyond Bitcoin itself. It applies to different areas of life, especially vetting companies too.
It's actually a philosophy that I have felt kind of seep into the rest of my life. And this is actually a good segue. I love to ask this question, like, how has Bitcoin changed your life?
And in so many ways, honestly. The first thing that came to mind is my personal journey going throughout school, you know, K through 12. I'd never got in trouble. I always got amazing, like not amazing, but I always got really good grades. Mm-hmm. I was always involved in extracurriculars, played sports, did all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Got to university. You know, I did the partying scene, but still got my degree in engineering. It's following the track. Got a very well-paying job straight out of school. You know, stay in my lane. Don't do anything ridiculous. Then when Bitcoin came in my life, one specific example I can think about is COVID. And all the Bitcoiners shouting out how the government is lying to you. And for me, that was a paradigm shift. I thought the government was on my side. So then I had to go in and do my due diligence and do some research and about COVID, these vaccines, the lockdowns, and why this is all happening. Why do we need to wear a mask? And there was information even when COVID started that like these masks did nothing. So that's an example of don't trust Verify. My entire worldview shifting now. Everywhere I look, there's Bitcoin teachings in it that, I look out in the world, I'm like, oh, it's so much different than I was raised and thought the world worked.
And so that kind of dropping of a veil.
Yeah.
What I find fascinating to think through is, and as we touched on earlier, I believe we're very, very fortunate. There's also been a bit of work as well that's gone into understanding what Bitcoin is and being in this position where you and I are now, you know, trying to build businesses in the space, et cetera. No one else might have figured it out yet, but they will at some stage. So it's like an awakening of this huge population of people that are going to go, hang on, you're actually lying. I didn't know that was allowed. Do you know what I mean? And I don't know what that means. Is that going to have, you know, huge kind of populist pushback and a massive fight, or is it just going to like kind of peter out and people are just going to get over it and ignore what's been told to them? I don't know.
I think what this is dependent on right now in our future path as humanity over the next couple of decades comes down to censorship and the flow of information. I could see a world where governments really start cracking down and most of the population cannot be awakened, or I could see the opposite too. I could see Elon Musk taking over Twitter, doing what he's doing, allowing information to flow freely, and we have a better society that's more awake, as you said. I'm not sure how it's going to go. I'm hopeful that we lean towards the awakening, and Bitcoin is just one way or tool to help facilitate that process on a global scale.
Yeah, cool, isn't it? And so that leads me then to, you know, what makes you most excited about the future? And it would be remiss of me not to mention that you've just been to have some photographs taken. So maybe you can dive into that a little bit. It's amazing how it changes us as people and it helps us plan for the future. So what makes you most excited?
Yeah, so right now what I'm doing is I'm from the East Coast, United States, and I'm traveling all on the West Coast for the next year and a half, at least until my wedding back in the East Coast. So I now have the freedom kind of to travel around, and it's honestly awesome. So the short term, I'm looking forward to being able to work remotely, have freedom money that I can use however I want. No one can tell me how I use it, spend it, whatever it may be, or earn it. And then after that, starting a family. I think the Bitcoin community overall too pushes family values. And that's something that we've kind of gone away from in society. So really looking forward to eventually next 3 to 5 years here, getting a family started, teaching the kids about Bitcoin and everything else in life. The things that I wasn't awakened to, but I am now, hope to instill that into them in an early age. And then long term, I mentioned this before, I'm really looking forward to the hires that we make for Bitcoin Talent Co. just to help build companies now. And these companies become $1 billion plus companies in the next 5-10 years. That's what I'm really looking forward to. Because I'm going to look back to this. I'm going to look back to this specific podcast conversation. I'm going to say, I called it.
Yeah, it was happening. Well, firstly, congrats to you and your partner for getting engaged. It's very, very exciting jumping down that rabbit hole of partnership with someone. So I'm a couple years ahead of you. I've got two babies running around my feet. It's absolutely awesome. Man. There are some days when you literally just, the world's ending and it's so tiring, but it's what life's all about. And there's no doubt that Bitcoin helps you make those decisions somehow, like as a father, as a sense of provider, sound money. Oh my God, how helpful is that? And then to chime on your point about what gets built, I mean, I agree. It's extraordinary to think about how we mentioned already how the Lightning Network strips out all of the requirements that e-commerce currently needs you to jump through to generate value in markets that just weren't even possible to exist today. And the kind of characters that you're going to be able to pull across from traditional tech, et cetera, they're going to actually build these things. Yeah, it's really cool. Okay, well, that's probably a good place to end it. So, Eric, so where is the best place people can reach out and get in touch with you?
Sure. Yeah, I'm on Twitter, EPOD Rules, EPODRULZ. Don't make fun of me. I made that in middle school, I think. I'm also on LinkedIn, Podwatch, Eric Podwatchki. My last name's PODWOJSKI. Cool. Just search me, connect with me. I'm happy to connect with all Bitcoiners. And lastly, I would say, if you want to get a job in the Bitcoin industry, or if you're a Bitcoin company that needs help with hiring, head over to our website and get in touch with us. And that's www.bitcointalent.co.
Thanks so much for joining, Eric. Appreciate it. Okay, friends, nice work. You made it all the way to the end of the episode. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this conversation. If you have any questions, then please don't hesitate to reach out. And if you enjoyed the episode, then please rate, like, subscribe, and share. That's it for now. Enjoy the rest of your day. All the best. Jake.